Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are, this is your girl E, and this is The Call, where we hear from powerful and interesting women about their journey to answer their life's calling. Got a great question from this week's Ask E segment that was actually sparked by a tweet that I tweeted a few weeks ago. It's funny because you never know what's going to resonate with people, but apparently this one did, because I think we're up to like 95,000 likes or something and over 35,000 retweets. Yeah, I'm bragging because I don't go viral often, y'all. This is a moment for me. But here's the tweet. It said, "The best career advice that I can give: don't ever attach yourself to a person, a place, a company, an organization, or a project. Attach yourself to a mission, a calling, a purpose only. That's how you keep your power and your peace. It's worked pretty well for me thus far." Okay, so that's what the tweet said. And in response, I got a lot of yes, and I needed this, and thank you, thank you. But I also got a few questions, and most of them were in the vein of this week's caller. So here we go.
Hey, Erica. Well, I saw your tweet the other day, and I'm really curious. Isn't focusing only on you and your purpose or your mission kind of disloyal to your job and the relationships you've built there? I mean, you just up and leave whenever you find something better. I'm just asking because I'm in a really toxic office situation right now, but I don't want to leave my colleagues hanging. I was hoping you could help.
Okay, look. So my stance on attachment does not mean that you shouldn't operate with integrity, that you shouldn't honor commitments, that you shouldn't build relationships, none of that. What it means is that you have to remember where your highest loyalty lies, and that is to yourself, to your mission, to your purpose, and to your goals. Like, look, I've had a career of really, really great jobs. I've loved, for the most part, the few exceptions, all of my teams, my bosses, the people that I've worked with. And yet every time I've known when it was time to leave, how to do that, certainly gracefully, right? Certainly don't burn bridges. But you don't do anyone a service being somewhere, whether that's a job or relationship, when you don't really want to be. That actually doesn't serve you or them. You're taking up space where someone else who really wants to be there could actually be. So leaving professionally and respectfully and thoughtfully and all the lees is the right way to do it. And you guys know my thoughts on capitalism in general, right? Like, capitalism wants you. It feeds off of this idea that you are your job so that the industry or the machine can demand and suck everything out of you and your full identity. I don't buy that. I don't play that game. I'm not loyal to an organization or a company. I do work for them and they pay me. That is actually the nature of our work relationships. I think sometimes we forget that, that I'm not there doing them a favor. And while I'm unbelievably grateful for every single work opportunity, I wouldn't really call what they're doing me is as a favor either. It's a job. It's a contract. And so if you start looking at these things as what they are, contracts, and remembering that your deepest contract is with yourself and with your purpose and with your goals, you can figure out that leaving isn't necessarily a bad thing, or that moving on and being strategic in order to help you meet those goals and fulfill your purpose is not necessarily a bad thing. And trust me, you can hit up all my old bosses and all my old jobs. Well, again, most of them. And they all still love me. So I promise your folks will still love you too. Okay? That was this week's Ask E. Make sure y'all leave your questions at 702-670-CALL. And I hope I can answer them for you. All right. So this week's guest actually knows all about walking away from what seems like a good thing. She was once like a VJ, or what was their new version? Like, it was like a TJ from MTV. She worked for them, but she knew in her heart that working a 9-to-5, even if it was for a big, amazing company like MTV, was just not for her. I am talking about Gabby Gregg, AKA Gabby Fresh. Gabby is a blogger, a style influencer, a fashion designer, and the co-founder of the gorgeous and perpetually sold-out clothing line, Prem. The Detroit native and self-described OG fat girl has had such a crazy journey, and being plus-size and proud has also been a large part of her brand and her work. So it's funny because after this interview, we left the studio, we took our selfie, we hugged and we said our goodbyes. And 15 minutes later, we looked up and realized we were next to each other in the nail salon. So our convo continued there. And even though there were no mics recording, I can tell you that who she is in this interview and who she is on Instagram and on her blog is really, really who she is. We talked about how hard we're both working to just try to make big things happen while we're walking through uncharted territory. And that's why I'm so excited to share this interview with you. You'll hear in our convo that there really isn't a straight line or a super clear path to success. It starts off one way. Sometimes shaped a lot by circumstances like graduating in a recession, circumstances that are outside of your control. And then from there grows based on your willingness to try things and put yourself out there. So in this convo about her life and her work, we talk about loving your body, about standing up for what you believe in without thinking of yourself as an activist, all the things. Okay? So this is Gabby Fresh on The Call. I am here today on The Call with Gabby Gregg, although really y'all know her as Gabby Fresh. Hi, Gabby.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for doing the show. I'm so excited to talk to you.
I know. I'm happy to be here.
I'm really excited because you are someone who is known for many things, but of course for your look, your style, your fashion, even your body, right, which is a huge part of what your work is in the world. But because of that, that means I don't see a whole lot on the internet about your personal life.
Like,
I mean, you blog, obviously, right? So your voice is out there a little bit. But I kind of want to know a little bit more about the story of Gabby.
Sure.
Okay, so let's start. So you grew up in Detroit?
Yeah. Okay. Born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, east side, in the actual inner city. People are always, like, assuming that I'm from the suburbs, but no. Inner city Detroit. Until I was 18 and left for college.
Oh, really? What was your childhood like? Fun? Good memories?
Yeah, I mean, definitely good memories. Obviously, as you get older and you get into therapy, you realize certain things weren't quite normal.
right.
In the moment, it was great.
Right.
Yeah, super positive. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I mean, I think the biggest transition and the hardest part of my childhood was I did switch from DPS, Detroit Public School, into a private school in the suburbs when I was in seventh grade, and that was like a very big culture shock. So to go from a majority black school to a majority white, very rich school was really tough on someone who's already like going through puberty and like questioning myself. Yep. So that was a really hard transition, but in general, definitely a positive childhood.
First of all, I'm laughing because you're one of the few people from Detroit that did not come through the door saying, "Hi, I'm Gabby from Detroit." Like, all my Detroit friends rep the D so hard.
I do. I have a D on my neck, like, tattooed.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I was kidding, but, like.
Yeah, no, we Detroiters love Detroit. Like, there's a very big passion and connection to that city because we're such the underdog. You know, I grew up with people hating Detroit. Like, even the people I was just talking about that I went to school with who were an hour outside the city, they were so afraid to go into the city. So to grow up around people with that mentality and then also to go off to college and live in other cities where people are like, "Oh, you're from Detroit? What?"
Right.
And, like, kind of look down on it. I mean, now it's kind of having this resurgence, of course, and people are more interested because it's getting quote-unquote hip again. But that's my home, and it's such an amazing city with amazing people.
What did you want to be when you were a kid?
That's a good question. I was all over the place, which I still am. I remember even taking some sort of test in college. I know that's not childhood, but in college I took a test, like, you know, in your aptitude and what you'd be good at. And it literally told me, like, you're going to be switching careers every few years of your life. Like,
really?
You're never going to be happy with one path. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is so true. But, yeah, growing up, I remember wanting to do fashion design. So I was always sketching.
You did.
Yeah. When I was in, like, fourth and fifth grade, I was sketching fashion. I was sketching homes. So I was always designing houses. And then by the time I got to high school, I still really loved fashion. I thought it would be really cool to be a casting director. I didn't know what that was called back then, but I was like, I want to be the person who chooses the actors in movies. I wanted to work on commercials. I just knew I wanted to have some sort of creative voice and do some sort of creative direction. But because I come from a family of teachers, like, both my mom and dad are teachers and my grandparents.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't really, and, like, coming from the inner city as well, I didn't have a lot of exposure to creative professions. Like, I didn't know what that looked like. I didn't know the path to get there. And so it's not until I became an adult that I've been introduced. And, of course, the world has changed so much with technology, too.
Right.
That I have been introduced to other people who, like, work in these amazing industries that I wish I would have known about when I was younger, but I really didn't have that mentor, or even my schooling didn't teach us about that. So I was so focused on, like, doctor, lawyer, teacher. Like, what else could you be? Like, I didn't know what existed outside of that, really, besides fashion, but I didn't know how to get there. And so, Yeah, I think I always had that creative bug in me, but I just wasn't sure how to express it or where to go.
It's so funny. I was just having a conversation with someone who's starting a program maybe 2 days ago about teaching young kids about the variety of creative careers
Definitely.
That are available to them that they
That's
don't know
so
about.
Genius. We need it.
We really need it. And even now, I mean, of course, with the internet, you see so much more.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still this idea. We're looking at talking about how can we do this with music videos where when these amazing moments happen, like Childish Gambino's This Is America video,
yeah,
right?
Amazing.
How can we not just celebrate him, but also the choreographer
exactly.
and the creative
the director.
Director and the director and all of
Stylist,
these roles
all
exactly
of it.
That are such an important part mm-hmm. of what we see
to
visually.
Create that. And I think in our culture too, part of it is that we only celebrate the artist, right? The front facing person. So
yep.
everyone knows his name, but very few people know the team that went into creating that product and that art.
Right.
And so I think the more we're able to celebrate those different people, the more people, or kids especially, will realize that all of the hard work and all the different positions it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when I was a kid and I loved movies and I loved TV shows and I thought the only way to be on TV or to contribute to that was to be an actor. I didn't realize there were all of these other
yep.
roles you could play to help create that. And so, yeah, I think that your friend has an amazing idea. It's really important.
Yeah. So you had all of these ideas. You kind of you knew that you there was something creative in you, that you were a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you go to college for?
So I went to college for international relations. And so
so the other direction.
Right? So it's so funny the way I came to that. I was really, really lost, first of all. So I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I had this feeling inside of me that I wanted to do fashion journalism. Like that was like my gut intuition. But I went to an all-women's liberal arts college that didn't have that as an option, obviously. And so I was looking through the different majors and, like, what careers people usually took after they went through those majors. And I saw that international relations often led to political journalism.
Oh,
and I love politics. And I was interested in fashion journalism. So I was like, okay, maybe this is the way I go. And
oh,
then
wow.
maybe I move to D.C., and then maybe one day, like, if I want to continue switching careers, I do, like, a lateral shift and go from political journalism to fashion journalism. Like, I was just trying to figure it out, and so
yeah.
that's how I ended up there.
Okay, so let me – now I'm going to rewind a little bit. So that was kind of from childhood to college
yeah.
in terms of what you wanted to do with your life and
mm-hmm.
profession and career. I'm very curious what your relationship was like or how you would tell the story about young Gabby and your self-image and body. Like, what did you, like, think of yourself and your body when you were a child? And did that at any point change and shift? I'm thinking maybe when you, you know, were also transitioning and dealing with going from one school to
yeah,
another. Like,
totally.
Tell me about that.
That's such a good question.
Yay!
Hard-hitting over here. okay, so great question. I think when I was really young, first of all, I had the privilege of not thinking about my body, right? When we're really, really young, I mean, unfortunately, girls starting really young now do start feeling uncomfortable in their bodies, but I remember just not thinking about it. And I think that's a privilege, right? Like, I wasn't paying attention to it in a good way. So I was more so focused on my talents or my interests. And so I remember getting – I wasn't a chubby kid.
Mm-hmm.
I think I started gaining weight maybe in third, fourth grade. And so my first memory of really being uncomfortable in my body was, I think it was probably fifth grade science class. It's crazy that I remember this. Fifth grade science class, I stood up to either ask a question or give a presentation. I can't remember. And one of the kids, ironically a fat kid, said, "Bigger is better." And that was from a commercial at the time for some car, and the entire class cracked up and, like, thought it was the funniest thing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I felt shame about my body.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't something I obsessed about. I think, to your point, when I switched schools, that's when I definitely became much more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only was I a minority there in the sense that I, one, was a girl of color, but also I was poor,
mm-hmm.
Relatively. I feel lucky because, again, my mom was a teacher, so we weren't struggling, but we were nowhere near the class of my peers. And so those two things already had me standing out, but then on top of that, my body was a lot bigger than everyone else's. And so to have those three things combined was really, really tough. I remember, so again, shopping, starting at that age was really hard.
Mm.
I always loved shopping. At my previous school, you know, everyone was about, you know, we were all in the same-ish socioeconomic class. Mm-hmm. And I was even, like, I considered myself, like, kind of stunting back then. I was like, oh, I have a guest outfit.
Right.
Like, I'm good. Like, you know, again, moving to this new school and having everyone around me, and I can't even remember the, they weren't wearing designer clothing, but it was just what in the Midwest at the time was cool in the Midwestern suburbs, which was like, I can't even remember, Moose Jaw, which is this Midwestern sweatshirt company, and I can't remember these yoga pants, but everyone wore these yoga
wow.
pants. I'm sure I'll get tweets about it because everyone's going to remember who lived in that area.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, there were just like specific things like and brands that were big then mm-hmm. that all of the girls were wearing that I couldn't afford. And we also had a large Jewish population, so I was constantly being invited to these bar and bat mitzvahs every single weekend almost
wow.
because the majority of the kids were Jewish, and everyone had to have a new dress every weekend. And so my mom was like, I can't afford this, like, because every dress for me was like $100, mm-hmm. and I would be begging her, like, I can't go with the same dress I wore last time.
Yeah.
On top of the dress, like, we had to actually give the gift of, and like, all my friends were giving each other $100, $200, $300 at the time. And I'm like, you know, they're turning 13. My mom's like, I can't spend $500 every weekend on this. Like,
right, right.
I literally cannot. But yeah, so all of that kind of, you know, weighed on me. And of
yeah.
course, now as an adult, I can look back and see how I can definitely relate to my mom and say, like, oh, my God, that was insane. But and when you're a 12-year-old girl, you just want to fit in and you just don't want to be known as, like, the poor kid. And
yeah.
so that was just, like, a really hard time for me, both because of class and size and race.
It's so interesting how those cultural dynamics really do shape us.
Oh, yeah.
I was, before you got here, I was thinking about that question about how your self-image developed and changed over time. And then I said, well, I'd never thought about that for myself. And it was a very similar answer, which was when I went to school, I went to predominantly white schools. But I was in an all African American neighborhood, community, church, friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was surrounded by people of color who were all different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only when I went to school that I felt large. Like, I
mm-hmm.
felt bigger than everyone. I felt like a giant.
Yeah.
I was taller. My thighs were big. And we went to private school, so we had these skirts that we had to wear. And my knee, this is the silliest thing, but I distinctly remember, I was like, oh, I have like two knees where she has one.
Oh,
like, I just
God.
Felt like I had a bigger
yeah.
knee. And that's
yeah.
a silly way to talk about it. But
no, when you're in it and you're a kid, that stuff matters.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it does. And so you, that's kind of the experience that you had as a child. Now we'll fast forward back to college when you're also kind of figuring out what you want to do with your life. You know you love fashion.
Mm-hmm.
When do those things start to connect? When you say, okay, my size, my passion for fashion. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it did. When did all of that kind of come out in the world?
Yeah, so I'll start with high school.
Okay.
So in high school, I actually ended up as a boarding student at that same school.
Okay.
So a lot of the local students are called day students, so they commute every day. And then there's a smaller population, maybe like 20% or 10 to 20% of the students are boarders. So we literally live on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an international, at that point, it's an international school. So like people are, you know, we have students from every country all over the world come and fly in to be a part of that academic experience. So I felt really lucky. And number one, the diversity improved in high school because of that.
That's great.
And number two, I was able to have a little bit more freedom. And so I remember just constantly going shopping at thrift stores.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I struggled because I couldn't afford the designer stuff that some of the girls at our school wore. But I definitely remember having a very specific personal style. And in retrospect, it wasn't great. But in the moment, I was very stubborn about it. Like, I knew what I liked and
yeah.
I knew how I wanted to dress and present myself. And that was always really important to me. I mean, I will say, I also love to sometimes roll out of bed in sweats as a boarder and like run to class. But when it came to fashion, I always loved it. But it was super hard back then to find anything in my size that really spoke to my personal style. So I
mm-hmm.
think that's where thrifting became my passion, because it was really about digging for those specific gems that you could make work for your body, even if they weren't technically in my size. And so that's something I perfected and got used to and fell in love with throughout high school. And so I continued that in college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also, you know, I had my first shopping experience at places like Torrid, which are specifically four plus sizes, and that really changed my life. And even though it's not the most fashion-forward store in the world, just that feeling of going into a store and knowing you're going to find something to fit you is mm-hmm. really transformative when you've been left out of that experience your whole adult life, to just feel accepted and feel like you know that these people, this store at least cares about you and you're not going to leave crying or feeling less than. And so that was my first time going to Torrid, was in college, and so that was really nice. And then my friend actually told me about LiveJournal. So I knew about LiveJournal a little bit. I had, like, kept some, like, daily journals and diaries on there of, like, high school drama. But I didn't realize it had these communities. And so basically they were early forums, like early internet forums and communities where people shared posts and talked about things. So anything from celebrities to clothing to whatever your passion may have been. So it was kind of like an early Reddit mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah.
And my friend from high school told me they had communities for fat girls. And I was like, what? And that honestly changed my life because for the first time I found a community called Fatchinista, which was the first time I had heard about body positivity. And that community married body positivity with fashion. And not just body positivity, but specifically fat politics with fashion. And mm-hmm. I had never heard of fat politics. I didn't know what that meant. And so I was just initially excited to find out that other people with my body type or other people who looked like me loved fashion, too, because my whole life I was the fat girl. I was the only fat girl who I thought liked fashion because we had been told by mainstream media and even in my lived experience that, like, fashion is not for you if you're above a certain size. And so to find this community where, like, other people my size also liked fashion and they were having fun with it and it wasn't just something I was experiencing alone in the world really changed my outlook. And then slowly over the years of college, as I was continued to be involved in that community, people post outfits, they talk mm-hmm. about their experiences, I warmed up to the idea of fat politics and it really changed my mind and opened my mind. And which fat politics is just the idea.
I was just going to ask you to define it for us.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if there's a specific definition. I don't want to mess it up. But basically the idea that all bodies are good bodies, right? So we're taught like, oh, she has a bad body. She has a good body. Or after a certain size, you're no longer healthy. Or after a certain size, you're no longer worthy. And so it was my first introduction to the idea that, like, you are okay in your body. Like, you don't have to buy into diet culture and the idea that, like, the pursuit of weight loss is the most important thing in your life. And, like, the fantasy of being thin was introduced to me, which is like this fantasy that so many of us have that, like, my life is going to start. I will be happy. I will find a boyfriend. I will X, Y, and Z when I reach this weight. Mm-hmm. And so to really be introduced to that and not only be introduced to it, but to read about it daily for my entire college career, along with seeing images of fat women, mostly women, in fashion really changed my perspective. And so I no longer was obsessed with weight loss. I mean, I still, you know, off and on definitely dieted and all of those types of things, but it was just like slowly changing my mind about the whole thing.
Yeah, I remember I read somewhere, I can't remember, it was some other interview, maybe it was a blog post, but you'd said this is the first time you saw, were around a community where the expectation wasn't that all you talk about was dieting and weight loss.
Definitely, exactly. So I think with women specifically, we all try to connect with each other and we want that connection, but so often, unfortunately, it's about weight and diet.
Yep.
It's just like this thing we've done where we feel like it's forming a connection, but really it's sad because we're just, instead of really connecting about things that I think truly matter, we're like focusing on these superficial things that also enforce and perpetuate this idea of beauty standards. And so, like, I would love for us to change that conversation. And I constantly am telling people when they ask me, like, how did you do it? How did you stay confident? How do you feel good in your body? One of the tips I give and that I've gotten from those communities is that you don't allow diet talk in your life. Like, tell your friends when they're talking about it, like, this is not something I really want to participate in, like, or I don't want to talk about this, and I don't think you should either, and here are the reasons why. Like, this is damaging, not only to you, but to me and to everyone around us, because if you are calling yourself fat and saying how you don't, you know, you need to lose weight before X, Y, and Z, like, how do you think that makes me feel? And what do you think that's perpetuating on a larger scale? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think all of those things just really changed my world.
Yeah. So quick question, quick detour off the timeline, mm-hmm. because you just said something. You said, so if you're calling yourself fat, and it's so interesting because I know that there's a lot of conversation and divergent opinion about the word fat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just is. Is it negative? Should you use it? So in that context, right, the way a lot of people are using it specifically to refer to themselves
yep.
is not positive.
Yeah.
And yet, right, the word in and of itself, right, like your IG bio is like mm-hmm. OG fat girl.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, so there's nothing wrong with the word itself. Is that kind of the way you approach it?
Yeah, totally. So I misspoke before. Like, basically, when I say don't call yourself fat, I was just more so meaning this idea that people use that word to talk negatively about themselves, specifically when they are not fat. So it's not like someone's identifying as fat as this either neutral or positive term. It's when people are using it to really talk down to themselves and about their bodies. And they ate a pizza, so now they quote unquote feel fat, or they are fat, or and that's the thing I think is really damaging. But in terms of the fat positive community, we use the word as kind of just a neutral descriptor. So mm-hmm. we basically reclaim the word from being an insult to being something that is just neutral.
Yeah.
And we really feel like that destigmatizes it. And saying, like, when someone's like, fat bitch, you're like, yeah, I'm fat. And what are you saying? Like, what does that actually mean?
Like,
let's actually assess what that means. I am fat, but what are you saying about me when you call me that
what
word?
What are you associating with that?
Yeah. And so I think actually identifying as fat has definitely changed how I see myself, but also how I see the word fat.
Mm-hmm. So you had this kind of great awakening. You found this community that has, you know, married your love, your burgeoning love of your own body with your love of fashion.
Mm-hmm.
When does this become a possible career, right? Because you're also, at the time, you're thinking maybe international relations or certainly journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when does the kind of Red Sea part and you're like, oh, I can make a living doing this, talking about this, caring about this?
It was honestly much, much later. It was years later. So I graduated from college in 2008 when we had the big recession, and it was really, really tough to find any work. I still had no idea what I wanted to do. So I graduated from college lost. I knew I liked fashion, but I still didn't really see my way into the industry. I didn't know if that would ever happen. I moved back home to Detroit. I moved in with my mom. I started applying to jobs, either not hearing back or going on a few interviews but not getting the job. So literally it was months of nothing. Like, actually the recession hit Detroit the hardest also. I should say that.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, I was applying to everything from creative jobs but also just, like, entry-level admin stuff. I was also applying to, like, places like Starbucks and waitressing, and, like, I didn't have experience in those things either. So, like, it was just this really tough place to be in and feeling kind of like, what did I just go to college for 4 years for? Like, yeah. So it was just a really hard time. And because I had spent the previous, like, 3 or 4 years blogging on LiveJournal, and people's individual fashion blogs were just starting to take off. So not fat girls, but I just mean in general. The blogosphere mm-hmm. had just really started to happen around 2007 a little bit. But these personal style blogs had started, and I was a fan of those. So I saw women and girls like Tavi Gevinson, who started when she was 14, mm-hmm. and Carla Deras, who was one of my inspirations. Again, she's straight size, but I loved their fashion and I loved what they had to say. And I said, why doesn't this exist for fat girls yet? And I kind of had in the back of my head wanted to start my own blog and my own website, but I never had, you know, things happen. I never did it.
Right.
And so as I graduated and had no job and I had all this free time and I still in the back of my head wanted to work in fashion, I was like, you know what? Let me start this website, start my personal blog, and that can be, one, just a passion point, but two, if I do go on interviews, I at least have something to show for myself in the fashion and just, like, arena. Like,
right.
I can at least show my writing skills. I can show a little bit of my personal style. So even though I haven't had any official experience, I have something to show for myself. And so I did go on a few interviews. I interviewed, I think, at InStyle magazine and a few others. I flew to New York when I got the interview as an intern, by the way, mind you.
Paid, unpaid.
Maybe a stipend, but unpaid. Flew to New York, interviewed, did not get the jobs, lied to them and told them I lived in New York, by the way. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I think I put my friend's address down. Yeah, long story short is I never got any kind of job out of this. So my blog actually, from word of mouth, started snowballing pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Some of the community members from LiveJournal had followed me over basically to my website and really liked what I was doing there. So we had a lot of engaging comments and community members in the comments, and they told their friends about it. And it was really one of the first of its kind. I can't say it was the first, but it was one of the first plus size fashion blogs and style blogs. I think it may have been the first in America. It was definitely the first to take off in a major way. Because of that, I was pretty quickly on – I had a quote in the New York Times within a few months. Whoa. And then I was on Good Morning America within a few months. And it wasn't just like a profile on me, I wish, but it was still like a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, this is cool. But I still at the time, there was no monetization in blogging. So I in no way thought this was going to be a career path, but I just loved what I was doing and I thought it was really important. And I thought maybe if anything, it would be a cool thing to have if I ended up going into a traditional fashion job.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I saw it. And so eventually, after not getting work for, I think, over a year, I moved, maybe two, yikes. My mom was like, figure this out.
You got to go.
So I was like, well, there's nothing in Detroit for me in terms of the economy, which is not there, especially as an entry-level employee. So I moved to Chicago because I couldn't afford New York. Side note is I tried for a second. I lived with my friend and it didn't work out. I was there. Totally a mess. So I moved back home and then I tried Chicago because I was like, it's not New York, but it's a step up from Detroit in terms of the economy and there might be something for me there. I was able to move in with a friend and the rent was super cheap. And so my mom helped out with the rent, but it was literally $300. Like it,
oh, wow.
Month. I know. Those were the days. So I, at that point, was just making money off Google ads on my blog. It was just like a sidebar of like these little ads that would run. And I don't know. I made a couple hundred bucks a month from that.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped. But I was broke. Like I was sleeping on a floor on a pile of clothes and eating ramen and dollar slices of pizza every day.
The thing I love about it's weird if you can't see me right, I have a huge smile on my face right now for everyone listening because it's so rare that we hear about all of those, like you kind of breezed through that story, but there were moments in there that would have been classified by someone watching.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, a failure. Oh, you didn't get this job.
Right.
You tried to live in New York and didn't. I just had a friend who did the same thing out here in LA and was like really, really trying to make it work. It didn't work out. Had to go back home to DC and felt like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, these things happen to most of us.
Definitely.
On the journey, right? Of not even just of pursuing your dreams, but just of like
of life.
To make a life.
Yeah,
right?
Any life.
Any life. Like there are setbacks, there are wins, there are losses, there's struggle.
Definitely.
You know?
It's a part of life. And I've come to realize it makes life better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I know it's cliche, but it really does. You have to go through that to come out the other side. But yeah, so I was broke. I was sleeping on a floor. I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I was applying for jobs in Chicago, didn't get any of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt, I mean, luckily I had this blog though. I had this blog. I didn't in any way again think it would be a career, but it brought me joy because I had created it and I had a community of people who commented and engaged with me because of it. And so I felt like I wasn't a total failure just because I had created something that was important to me and to other people. But that said, I didn't, and I had just, I had built a Twitter following as well. And so we were, this is pre-Instagram days, right? And so I had these community members either commenting on my blog or on Twitter and engaging and all these things. And one day I got a call, actually I got a Facebook message from someone saying like, hi, Gabby, I'm a producer at a cable network and we're looking to like talk to you about a big opportunity. And I was like, oh, okay. I honestly thought it was a scam because especially back then you're constantly getting these like scammy emails. And somehow or another we got on the phone and it was a producer from MTV.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we really love what you're doing, both with your blog and your Twitter and social media. And we are looking for the next MTV, what they called TJ, which stood for Twitter Jockey. They were trying to move away from the VJ and like, you know, adapt with the times.
And right.
They thought that would be a cool idea. As I found out more about the opportunity, it was like basically you would win a job with MTV, but you had to compete with like 20 other. They're like, you'd be one of 20 people competing for this job. And I was just like, ugh, I'm just not a competitive person. And I remember
really?
I hate competition. And I remember being young and watching, of course, the MTV VJ competition and like remember the crazy things they had them do. And I was like, I don't think I want to do that. I was like, oh, I'm good. And you know, the craziest thing about that is I was broke and with no income. And MTV was like, you could win a job with us. And I was like, oh, no, thank you. I don't.
Doing that.
I just like, I've always been someone who's probably way too much stubbornly follows my gut and stubbornly like says no to things that I know don't feel right to me.
I would highlight that if I had a highlighter for your words. That's just really important.
And so I'm, trust me, I have been called every name in the book. Like everyone side eyes me and like, what? You're turning that down? You're turning this down? I should say I also, when I was in college, I interned with Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. So I was a pharmaceutical sales rep during the summers in college. And right out of college, they make very good money.
Right.
It's like $75,000 immediately out of college. They give you a car. They give you a laptop. They give you a cell phone. They pay for all your gas. It's crazy. And I was like, no, I hated it. I hated sales. I was like, not doing this. So there's that.
There's the following the gut.
Yeah. And so then the next thing with MTV, I was like, no, I'm good. And then they were like, it's a $100,000 job. And I was like, oh. And I was just thinking about how I didn't know where my next meal was going to come from. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And once I, they also talked to me and like talked me into it. They were like, please, we really love what you're doing. It's not going to be embarrassing. Cause I was so afraid they would like have these embarrassing, crazy. I was like, I don't want to run around Times Square in my underwear. Like, that's not happening. I'm not doing that. And they were like, no, 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 it's nothing like that. Like, trust us. It's like a cool digital competition. Like, it's not going to be anything embarrassing or crazy. So I was like, okay. So I ended up signing on. Long story short is I won. So my community really came through and voted for me through many different rounds, and I ended up winning the job.
Wow.
So I moved to New York.
There you go. Back to New York.
So I got to New York, and they relocated me, and that was another reason I took the opportunity, because I knew if I won, I would get to be in the city I wanted to be in. So I moved to New York and started at MTV, and within like a month, I was hosting the pre-show of the VMAs, and it was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was my first, obviously, like, the first time I was like, oh, this thing I have created is more than just a like a passion project.
Right.
I also saw the power of my community and the power of influence and all of those things. Like, I knew I had created this big following, but I had never translated that into anything else.
Right.
Like, into a job or anything. And so that was the first time I was like, oh, this could
this
be
valuable.
Something. Yeah, that's this is valuable. And so that's the thing MTV taught me. Going back to me being stubborn, I didn't like the job. And I knew probably going in I wouldn't, and I didn't. but it did bring a lot. It was a huge learning experience for me. And obviously working at a network like MTV is an amazing opportunity. And so I took a lot from it. But the other thing I took from it was I don't want to do this. And that, I think, in itself is a great lesson. I was like, this is not for me.
Yep, learning what you don't like is just as important as learning what you like.
I always knew. I was like, I'm too young. Like, I don't want to get stuck in a job I don't like at this age. Like, this is the time. If I'm going to sleep on a floor and figure it out, now is the time to do that. I'm 22 or 23. Like, I don't have my entire life to figure it out, but right now I have the time to figure it out. And so I left. And I decided to move back to Chicago because that's where my boyfriend was. We had met when I was there the first time, and we were long distance. And so I flew back to Chicago. And as soon as I got there, I got an email from InStyle magazine, where I had applied for an internship and gotten rejected, saying, like, we want you to have a page at our magazine as an editor. And so I had just moved. I was like, oh, God, I would love to do this, but I just moved. And they were like, well, we really want you, so we're okay with you doing it, you know, long distance and just flying in when we need you once a month.
Yeah.
And I said, okay.
So that's the fashion. That's the journalism. That's
it's
all
crazy.
That's it.
I know. So it kind of came full circle. And at the same time, I had been blogging throughout all of this. And as I left MTV, I also had finally realized that I could monetize in a real way. And I told myself, like, I'm going to give myself a year. I know I don't like corporate America. MTV is the coolest corporation in America. And if I don't like it there, I'm probably not going to like any of these other ones.
Right.
So let me try to really focus on my blog, and if I'm able to pay my rent, that was like my goal. I was like, if I can pay my rent from my blog every month, then I'll keep going. And so that's what I ended up doing. I mean, the InStyle money wasn't a lot, but between that and the money I made from my blog, I could get by.
How did you – that transition to realizing – when you realize that your community and this platform that you had built – was more than just what it had already been, which was a place that brought you joy. It was a place for, you know, like-minded women or women who were looking for a particular conversation that they could convene around. It was all of those things. Mm-hmm. But now you're realizing it's also money, mm-hmm. right? How did you balance that? Like keeping it authentic yeah. and the same spirit that grew it, but now also realizing I can pay my bills with it.
Totally. I mean, I think I was really, really, really sensitive to it in the beginning, especially. I was just like, I was so scared. I thought when you accepted a sponsored post, that meant that, like, the brand could come in and write whatever they wanted. And so it was truly Patrice Yersic of Afrobella was an OG blogger, too. She started even a few years before me, and she was, like, the first beauty blogger, basically, mm-hmm. and, like, specifically natural hair blogger. Pre all of this.
Oh, yeah, I remember her. Yeah.
And it's before photos even. Like, she wasn't even showing pictures of herself. She was just, like, truly, and she, I think, majored in journalism. So her blog was, like, truly a resource for natural mm-hmm. hair. And she taught me. She was like, look, Abby, like, you can make money. Like, you don't have to be a quote-unquote sellout. Like, there's a way to, you know, marry this. Yeah. And she was like, that's not what a sponsored post means. Like, it just means that, like, you're accepting money, but you are doing what you would be doing anyway, which is, like, shooting outfit pictures and, like, talking about the look and talking mm-hmm. about where to get it and stuff. It doesn't have to be this, like, sales pitch or you don't have to accept anything you don't want to accept. And so, like, really reframing it and wrapping my mind around that is the reason I chose to go in that direction. And then I also, a few months later, ended up getting the biggest deal of my life to that point, which was to be the face and brand ambassador for a new plus-size brand, Eloquii. And when they had first launched under The Limited, they went to my management company, DBA. I hadn't been signed there yet. And DBA started sourcing and looking for plus-size bloggers, and they found me, and they were like, oh, this girl is doing some really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And they got the contract. Basically, they were representing Eloquii, but they liked what I was doing, and through that contract, decided to also sign me on under their talent roster.
So how did becoming a face of something, mm-hmm. being an influencer, being hyper-visible at mm-hmm. this point in your life, how did that change how you viewed yourself? Were there ways that you behaved differently or looked at yourself, your ideas, your thoughts, your work, any differently?
That's a good question. I don't think there was anything consciously that I had changed. I do think I'm a very private person, and I think I definitely, like, froze a little bit in the beginning. Not in the very beginning, it was like it felt like we were all friends, right? It was like very community oriented. And then as things grew and kind of felt bigger than me, mm-hmm. I remember being a little nervous and like, wait. Like, wait, what's happening? And I like shut off a little bit. Yeah. So I stopped talking as much about my personal life and started more so focusing on only fashion because I was like, I don't like this. I don't like people knowing my business. And like, I don't know these strangers and right. all these things. It was just like a weird transition. And then I think it took a while, but like, I'm totally over that now. But yeah, I just went through a moment of like trying to, one, be private. And I have a little bit of that left in me. But two, also just, I think I went through a phase of also trying to be perfect. Mm. And that was, thank God that I'm no longer that person. I'm still a perfectionist. I'm a Virgo, so I'm always going to have
Ditto.
A little bit.
When's your birthday?
Oh, my God. September 9th.
I'm September 13th.
See, girl, it's tough. Like, I'm grateful for it because I think it makes us put out really amazing
We work hard.
Things, but we are so critical of ourselves. And so that's tough. But, like, especially, you know, being a front-facing personality, I think I thought I had to be perfect. And especially as a fat girl, especially as a fat black girl, you're trying to, like, combat these stereotypes. And you want to appear like, oh, no, see, like, I am happy, even though you told me I can't be, and all of these sorts of things. I thought I had to be that icon for the fat community, like, for people to point to and say, like, it's possible. And so once I got older and realized, like, that's not sustainable. Like,
right.
And then when you yourself. Do that, you also put a target on your back, because then when you do fail or when people do see your flaws, it's, like, a big thing as opposed to just being like, no, I'm just human.
Right.
And so I'm very happy that I've had therapy.
You're growing past that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder, and it's interesting that you brought up the idea of kind of being this iconic fat black girl, right? That you felt the need to be a certain way mm-hmm. for the sake of those folks who looked up to you, who appreciated you, who quote unquote followed you, right? But in this moment when there's so much conversation about activism, right? Mm-hmm. when it feels like everything that we do in some way sometimes is authentically activism, other times just gets labeled as activism, mm-hmm. right? I'm so curious to know how you think about your work. Is there some of it that you consider political and some of it that you're like, no, girl, this is just me. I'm just being me.
Right.
Does that label get exhausting?
That's such a good question, man. Like, it's because I think about this all the time, but I've never been asked about it. So I love it. It's interesting because, rewinding back to that live journal community, Fashionista, it was extremely political. And I wasn't there yet in my politics. I just wasn't. I was 19, 20. Like, mm-hmm. I just loved fashion. And so I was actually resistant to that and a little annoyed by it in the beginning. I was like, can we just talk about clothes? Like,
right.
What is all this other stuff? And so one of the reasons I started my blog originally was because I wanted a place for fat girls to talk about clothes without the politics. Now,
oh, interesting. So that was like one of the intentions.
Yeah, I did not want to talk about politics. And I think I was okay with body positivity and I was okay with talking about it in a neutral way, like talking about fat bodies in a neutral way and talking about clothing in an exciting way. And being positive around it, meaning talking about clothing as a way to express yourself as opposed to hide yourself in like a way that the fashion industry had never talked about clothing for plus size women. So I was all about that, but I didn't want to explicitly talk about politics in the sense that the other community did. And so that's where I started. But so many people, of course, also say being a fat girl and wearing all the things you're not supposed to wear and talking about giving other women the freedom to do that as well is political,
it's
right?
It's inherently political. Same thing with natural hair, right?
Exactly.
Like you have it, it just becomes political.
Yeah, and so I definitely co-signed that to an extent, but it is hard because then I was like, oh, yeah, that is true. And so then eventually I started calling myself an activist, but then when you call yourself an activist and you're not doing X, Y, and Z, then people are like, you're not an activist. And so it just has been a consistent thread throughout my professional career that I, like, go back and forth. Like, yeah. I don't know if you want to call it activism or not. All I know is I believe in the freedom for fat bodies, and I believe that fashion is one way to express that freedom. And I'm much more political now than I was 10 years ago when I started.
Uh-huh.
Overtly so now. And especially with everything currently in our political climate, I think it's actually a disservice and to just not talk about politics in an overt way anymore. Like, we don't have that luxury. We don't have that privilege. And I don't know if we ever did, but especially now, if you have a platform, I think you have a responsibility to talk about it.
Yeah. So because your body is so much a part of what your public persona is and what your work is in the world, right? I'm so curious about this. So when you hear, I think you straight size mm-hmm. models, stylists, folks in the fashion industry talk about their bodies as they get older, especially, or as mm-hmm. they kind of have been in the public eye for a while, there's always this narrative about, well, because my body is my work, I have to stay skinny forever, or I have to stay looking this way. And I'm so curious, do you feel that pressure at all to kind of have your body remain the way it is?
That's such a good question, too. Sorry, I keep saying that, but they are. It's so funny. I remember that was actually the question I got asked the most back in the day. So my blog was originally called Young, Fat, and Fabulous. And, like, the first thing people would ask me was, like, but what if you're not fat anymore? Like, are you going to change the name of your blog? And that's not why I ended up changing it. I changed it because I was so sick of being asked about fatness. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you guys are missing the point. Like, I want my blog to be about fashion first. And so I felt like that word was so much of a distraction that I was taking away from, like, my actual message. So I was like, I just want the fat fly part to come through in the pictures and in the copy and not necessarily, like, be the first thing that is this controversial word that people see when they come to my website. So that's the reason I changed it. I mean, yes and no. I would be lying if I said I never felt pressure. I've definitely, my weight has fluctuated throughout the years. I started 10 years ago, so my weight has gone up and down and up and down.
Which is normal. It's like, that's
totally
people's
normal.
Bodies change.
And I think especially, you know, I've gone from a size, mostly I'm somewhere around a size 16, 18, but right now I'm a 20. I've been as small as a 14, and I go up and down, and it's so funny. The commentary I get every time is frustrating from everyone. Like, I have my core followers who have followed me for 10 years, and they know, they get it. And then I have people who follow me and find me every day, and that's totally fine, but they don't really know my history or my politics. And so, you know, if I lose 20 pounds and everyone's like, oh, my God, you look so skinny. What are you doing? Like, what are you eating? And I'm like, what? Like, do you not know anything about
right?
me? Like well, why do you think that's an appropriate question to ask me? And I purposely do not talk about my body. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm going – I mean, I just don't – it goes against everything I believe in to publicly talk about weight loss or, you know, I think it's okay to talk about your feelings sometimes around those things and be honest about it, so that we can actually introduce some nuance into the fat positive conversation and, like, not pretend like it's all hunky-dory all the time. But I will never be the girl who posts a before and after picture. Like, that's never something I would do. And I kind of feel a little hurt when, like, I see other body positive icons do that. And there have been a lot of fat icons who the industry and, like, the communities look up to who have lost weight and who have handled it in a perfectly neutral way where they don't make it their storyline and they don't now turn on everything they've said previously and suddenly, like, I feel great, I look better. Like, that is hurtful. And so I will never be the person to do that. And so I get frustrated when people suddenly want that from me if and when I do lose weight.
So since you said people ask you about your body all the time and we've spent a good chunk of time talking about your body, tell me something that people don't ask you that you wish you could talk more about.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it.
Because if it's not right, so people talk about your body so much because part of, not the entirety of your work, but part of it is about being fat and proud, right?
Yeah.
But so then the other part is about the fashion.
Yeah.
And that's in some ways the central part, and even why you said you started the blog. So what do you wish people knew more about you and the fashion?
I mean, sometimes I guess my answer to that is I just wish sometimes, like, if I'm on a red carpet or if I'm doing an interview with a magazine, like, I wish they would just ask me about my clothes like they would anyone else.
Like the basic question, like, tell me what you're wearing.
It's always – I get the same questions every interview. This one not included, but especially with fashion magazine, it's more about, like, my confidence and
Oh, my God. I was not going to ask you about that because
thank God.
So annoying.
Yeah, and it's kind of a backhanded compliment. I get it. I understand, like, because fat girls do face so much discrimination, it is hard to be confident when you're fat. I get that. But at the same time, it's also just like, they're like, you're so brave. You're wearing a bikini. It's like,
I get the same thing about being dark skinned. Like,
yeah.
It's, how do you have so much confidence?
Right.
I'm like, because I look good.
Exactly.
That's it.
Right? And so I get it. But anyway, so those are the questions that get old, I should say.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, they're so available. I'm like, I've been doing interviews for 10 years. Like, Google it.
Yeah.
I know that's, I don't say that, but that's what I want to say sometimes. But yeah, no, I think asking just about the clothes themselves and, like, what I want to express through this outfit. And, like, even now, my co-founder, Nicolette Mason, who's also an OG plus-size blogger, we founded Prem, which is our clothing line. And when we do press for that, we get those same questions. And sometimes I just want to talk about, like, what was our inspiration for the season and not just about all the other stuff. While I do think that stuff is important. So I try to balance both, right? Because I do think it's important. Like, we are also trying to change the world and, like, change perceptions of fat bodies and also encourage fat girls to, like, really feel good about themselves enough to participate in fashion and, like, show them that they can wear crop tops and bikinis and sheer pieces and all these things that we're making. So I get both sides, but sometimes I just want to talk about the fun stuff.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because the show is called The Call, right? And we talk about what wakes us up every day, what we feel compelled to do in the world, what pulls us, what is that motivating idea or driving force. And sometimes that sounds so weighty, right? Especially in this moment culturally, and we assume that the call has to be political. It has to be taking a stand. And sometimes it's like, no, I'm a creative person, and the call for me is that I want to make these beautiful things in the world for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, so you said that you wish people asked you more about your fashion. I'm going to ask you the question you just said you wish people asked you, which is, what is your inspiration right now for the way that you dress or for the clothes that you've designed for your line?
I'm really inspired by color right now, and it's so funny because on top of Prem, I also have a swimwear collection of 5 years with Swimsuits for All.
Let me tell you, I have been trying to get my auntie. So my auntie is plus size. She's like my best friend, and I grew up, she would drag me around to Lane Bryant's, and we would go in every time, and no shade to Lane Bryant, but she would complain. She was just like, the clothes, and this was like 10, 15 years ago. She was like, the clothes would feel so matronly and, like,
definitely.
And she's just fly. So she would come out every time not having something that she loved. And I remember when I found you years ago, I was like, auntie, you have to see her. You have to see her.
Oh, my God.
And then I sent her your swimsuits. And she will not wear it because she's still, like, I mean, she's a little older now. So she also feels like, I don't. She still wears, like, T-shirts and, like, skorts. But I remember seeing your swimsuits and I was like, they're just beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
They're just so gorgeous.
Will always have a soft spot in my heart for swim. As much as I love designing women's wear now, like, swimwear was my entry into design, and I love it. It's such a fun category to design. But so I'm designing that simultaneously with Prem, and I also have a lingerie collection. And I'm doing all three right now, and it's so funny to see the overlap in colors and, like, direction
really?
Generally.
You can
and
see
I didn't
the thread.
Do it on purpose, but I'm like, well, I clearly like a specific color palette right now. yeah, so I think I'm really into, like, neutral and, like, deserty tones and just kind of, like, these really – these colors that haven't, I don't think, historically been used a lot in fashion, but now are coming back into trends, like burnt orange and siennas and kind of these ochre greens and mustard yellows and – that's kind of the direction.
Which is what
I'm
you're wearing
in.
Right now.
Right?
Like a, yeah.
So this is like a yeah, this is a yellow trend from our line. We're having a lot of fun. But I don't have like a specific visual inspiration from one place. I definitely have private Pinterest boards that I'm pulling from Street Style and Runway and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But there's no like one category or place or person that's inspiring me. Besides Rihanna, love her forever.
I mean, who?
I mean,
Rihanna's
like
a permanent inspiration.
I
don't
say that
for us all. For
she's
everything.
Just like baseline inspiration.
Yeah. What do you think about her lingerie line?
It was great. I mean, okay. Let me just be honest. I liked it. I didn't buy anything.
Okay.
I thought it was really cute, but it didn't go as hard as I wanted it to go. Like, I thought she was going to go harder with some of the design.
Yeah.
But I think she is all about being accessible from what I can tell. And I'm super happy that she did it at an accessible price point. And I think if she did what I kind of would want to see from her, it would be a lot more expensive. And then,
oh, that's a good point.
So some of it was really great. I saw some of my friends wear it and have been wearing it on Instagram, and they look fly. So I can't complain. But I like my stuff.
That's a great answer.
I'm partial.
That's a great answer.
If you're plus size and you know, check out Gabby Fresh.
Yes. Okay, so that's a good place to wrap up. But I'll close with this last question. So what would you say, let's take it all the way back, what would you say to a little girl in Detroit right now mm-hmm. who is creative and feels like she wants to make things that maybe she doesn't see in the world? And whether that's clothes or something mm-hmm. else, clothes or media, television, whatever it is, what advice would you give to her? What one piece of advice to answer that call in her life?
I would say start now. So that's the biggest hurdle I have faced in the past is, like, again, that perfectionism. And even now, I haven't done this yet, but there's so many things I want to do with my life besides fashion. And so I'm looking towards like screenwriting.
I was going to ask, like, what?
Yeah, like screenwriting and directing and stuff. That's like where I always wanted to end. And I see that in the future, but I'm always too scared to start. And so I, especially with the digital world and all the resources everyone, including kids, have available to them right now, whether it's signing up for Masterclass, which is like a little bit cheesy, but it's a good introduction, especially for someone who's like, you know, 11 or 12, like
yep.
to get these introductions to these classes in the creative world. So whether it's screenwriting or, you know, photography or fashion design, they have all of that there. And if you can't afford it, there's YouTube videos. Like there's so many things to teach yourself,
mm-hmm.
the things that I didn't know how to teach myself when I was their age. So start now. Start writing, whether it's a blog or an Instagram, whatever it is. Like, it's going to be bad in the beginning, and that's okay.
Oh my God.
And I wish I could learn that for myself.
There's this video
but
online.
It's so true.
It's an Ira Glass.
Oh, yeah, I know
right?
It.
The quote, one? Of course,
yep.
right?
Yeah,
where it's like the gap between if you have good taste and
yep.
what you're making is just always going to be wide in the beginning. And
mm-hmm.
it's so hard, especially as a perfectionist or Virgo, it's yeah. so hard to push past that initial point when
mm-hmm.
you know
that what you're making right now isn't what you want to be making.
Not, yeah.
yeah, it's not there yet. And that's okay. And I am learning that right now still. But yeah, that's what I would tell. It's never too early. Like, I wish I would have started when I was younger. And I think.
Wait. Yeah, but you started when you were like, what, 19? How much younger
yeah,
would you
I was 22. But I just mean, one, I didn't know that was going to be a career. But I mean, like, I wish all that creative energy I had as a kid, I had somewhere to really put it.
Got it.
And explore. Because I think if you're a 10-year-old and you're like, ooh, that'd be cool to make movies, it's hard when you don't have the parents who are encouraging that, like, spark of passion, right? So, you know, if the perfect parent would be like, oh, you want to make movies? You're interested in that? Like, here's a video camera. Like, have fun.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of believe in yourself enough to be like, you don't need a video camera anymore. You have an iPhone. You want to make movies. Like, just start doing
yeah.
things with your friends. Like, it doesn't matter if it's good or not, but it's just that practice of, like, what to do and watch those YouTube videos and, like, kind of learn editing and imagine by the time when you're in college. Like, imagine what you could be doing.
So then in the spirit of it's never too late, which is something I
mm-hmm.
believe, let's flip that. What would the advice be any different for someone, especially because you're talking about being a kind of person who
never.
Wants to switch yeah. careers and is always, what would you say to someone now who's got a passion question that they have not yet explored or tapped into.
Yeah, I guess the advice would be the same, and it's something I have to tell myself again because I'm getting older. But I don't think it's too late, and I look up to people like Ava and see that she didn't have a video camera in her hand until I think 30, 31.
Yep.
And so the idea that it's not too late, I think it's harder when you're older. I think it's a disservice to pretend like it's easy when you're trying to pay rent and you might have kids and you have responsibility to yourself and other people. But if you really feel passionate, I don't think it's ever too late. I am, like I said earlier, I'm the most stubborn person ever. I get people to quit their jobs. I'm that girl. Like, I've gotten at least 5 people I know to quit. I'm like, you don't like your job and you're complaining about it every day. Like, this is your life. You have one life. You hate your job. This is 40 hours of your life a week. Like, you have the ability to change career paths, even if it's not your ideal next job. Like, you know this isn't right. So let's figure out what's right. And so I am a big proponent of following your passion and, like, figuring it out. And I'm just a risk taker. I know not everyone is, but I'm like, well, I'll go 5 years without health insurance and cross my fingers. Can't always do
and
that.
It worked out for you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think so.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gabby.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you, Gabby, for such a great, great conversation. Just so you know, I am ordering swimsuits from your line as we speak. I hope everyone else is too. Make sure to check out her new clothing line, Prem. Thanks so much to our wonderful producer, Melody Rao. And of course, this show is published, as always, by Man Repeller. I am your girl, E. And until we talk again, y'all know what to do. Keep loving, keep fighting, keep dreaming, and above all, keep answering your call. Peace, y'all. Calling.